Chapter 10 Ramon had never intended to leave Earth. It was one of those accidents of circumstance and little more. At 15, he'd taken work in the open pit mines of southern Mexico. One of the operators had fallen sick, too much dust in his lungs, and Ramon had taken his place. The overseer had shown him how to drive the old lift, warned him that the three-story-tall earth movers weren't going to slow down if he got in the way, and his career had begun. 16-hour days in sun hot enough to melt and crack the plastic seals around his pitted windshield, moving and smoothing slag and gravel according to the shouted orders. The rags he tied over his mouth began the morning in any number of bright colors, blue and red and orange, and ended the gray of dirt. After one of the older workers had kicked the shit out of him, he joined a work gang under Palenque. Old Palenque, who was queer and crazed, mean as a rat and ruthless as the cancer that finally killed him. But he made sure no one fucked with his team. He was the one who'd shown Ramon how to stick a woman's sanitary pad in his hard hat to keep the sweat out of his eyes. Those had been terrible days, working the mines. He'd slept on a company cot in a wood shack, hardly better than the squatters' holes he'd grown up in. The food had tasted of grit. It was a grinding, endless exhaustion, and the money he made was hardly enough to get drunk with on Saturday night. And still, it was work. Palenque had been his ticket. The old bastard had made his crew learn. In the nights, when no one wanted anything more than to sleep and try to forget the day, Palenque made them all watch tutorials on mining technology and industrial geology. Ramon had hated it, but he didn't want to get cut from the work gang. So, half against his will, he'd learned. And though he would never have said it, he found himself enjoying it. Stone made sense to him, the way that land formed, folding ancient histories into itself until someone like him came along and cracked it open. The half-hour tutorial sessions were the best part of his day, almost worth losing the sleep for. And perhaps Palenque had seen it in him, because the time came when the Silver Enya ships arrived at the platforms above Mexico City. Huge beyond imagining, they hung in the sky like hawks riding an updraft. There was a contract, a colony planet. The first wave had left 30 years before, and now the Enya wanted to sling a ship after them to bring the industrial infrastructure that the planet would need. The first colonists wouldn't reach the planet for another several centuries, according to the clocks sitting on Earth. But with the effects of relativity and the stuttering reality of the Enya drive engines, Ramon could be there in little more than a year of ship's time. Anyone who took a contract to go out into the black, carrying the questionable fruits of human industry, would by definition outlive everyone who stayed behind. That alone seemed enough to convince Palenque. He accepted a contract and signed his whole work gang up with him. Ramon remembered taking the orbital shuttle up to the platform, gliding twice around Earth, and ending practically right above where he'd started. He was 16, and leaving his world behind. The only regret he'd felt at the prospect was when he'd looked down from the Enya ship. The blue of the ocean, the white of the clouds, the industrialized land masses glittering in the crescent nighttime like a permanent fire. Earth was prettier when you were away from it. If you backed up far enough, it was even beautiful. Palenque had died on the trip. The tumor had been pressing on his heart for months. Ramon and the others of the work gang had scrambled to reorganize themselves, fearing that the Enya wouldn't honor the contract without Palenque. And they were right. The agreement was voided, and when the great ships reached the Sao Paulo colony, the excess boys were sent out into the strange world as generalized laborers. He'd gone from being nothing on Earth to being nothing on a colony world. There was no way to return to Earth. Everyone he'd known there was already dead. But he knew what Palenque had taught him. He found more tutorials, apprenticed himself to a prospecting outfit that went bankrupt after a few years. He'd bought one of the old vans just before the foreclosure and set himself up as an independent. That first run out into the Terreno Cimarron, had been like winning the lottery, like coming back to a place he'd forgotten. The great empty sky, the forests and the ocean, the great fissures in the south, the towering mountains in the north. Empty. It was the first time in his memory that he'd been truly alone. And he'd wept. He remembered now how he'd sat in the driver's seat, letting the autopilot carry him, and wept like a man who'd seen Jesus.
"You are suffering the effects of recapitulation," Manek said. "As the structures of your brain complete their formation, the memories will become less intrusive."
Ramon looked over at the thing, wondering if it was trying to reassure him, or scold him, or if its agenda in speaking was comprehensible in human terms. "What the fuck are you talking about?"
"As your neural paths conform to their proper flow, older patterns will command temporary, inappropriate prominence."
"Thanks," he said. "I wasn't worried about it." And then a moment later, "So, if I try real hard, I can make a memory grow back?"
"No," Manek said. "The process would be impeded by will. You are not to try to remember specific events. To do so will decrease your function. You will refrain."
"Kind of like picking at scabs means they won't heal," Ramon said, then shrugged and changed the subject. "Hey, how was it you got here, anyway?"
"We participate in flow. Our presence is inevitable."
"Yeah, whatever. But you monstrosities, you don't come from here, right? You can't. There aren't any cities or factories or those bug tower things like the Turu use. You don't eat the animals or plants here the way you would if you fuckers had evolved here with them. This isn't your planet. So how was it you got here?"
"Our presence was inevitable," Manek said again, "given the constraints upon the flow of what your flawed language would call my people. This outcome was required."
"You hide inside a mountain," Ramon said, looking out between the thinned slats of the flying box to the green and orange smudge of the treetops 3 meters below. "You're all hot and bothered to stop this other version of me so no one finds out about you. You know what I think?" Manek didn't respond. A thin, transparent membrane slipped over its eyes, dulling the orange color. Ramon thought there were birds who did something like that, had eyelids they could see through. Or perhaps it was fish. Ramon grinned and leaned back. "I think you were out there for the same reason I was. I think you're hiding from something."
"From what was the man hiding?" Manek asked.
Ramon felt a stab of unease. He hadn't meant to tell the thing about the European. But how could it matter now? "I killed someone. He was with a woman, and he didn't treat her so good. I was drunk, and he was being loud and stupid. He said some shit. I said some shit. It ended up in the alley, you know? Turned out he was the ambassador from Europa, and I put a knife in him. Anyway, I wanted to get the fuck away, get someplace they wouldn't find me, and wait for the thing to blow over. And then I find you, pendejos."
"You killed one of your own kind?"
"Sort of," Ramon said. "He was from Europa."
"Had he restricted your freedom?"
"No. And he didn't fuck my wife or any of that other shit. It wasn't like that."
"Then why was it you killed him?"
"It doesn't bother me," Ramon said. "It was just one of those things. They happen sometimes. Like an accident. We were both drunk."
"Hard drink," the alien said. "It removed your constraints?"
"Yes."
"You kill to be free, and freedom causes you to kill," the alien said. "This cycle is Aubre."
"It's got drawbacks," Ramon said. What had the cabron said? Ramon tried to remember how it had happened. The European must have said something or done something. made some joke or crack or comment that had driven them out to the alley. Had it been over the woman? It seemed like perhaps it had. He remembered the alley, the knife, the blood changing colors under the shifting light. But before that, things were missing and out of focus. He didn't know how to tell if that was a result of being drunk or the unformed nature of his new alien-built brain. Why did you kill him? The question seemed better and better all the time. In the northern sky, great clouds gathered, piling up white and gray and yellow. Green balloons, the hydrogen-bladdered plants they called sky lilies, dotted the clouds, moving in slow, lazy whorls, where the high, thin winds caught them and made them tumble like jellyfish in the sea. They were a sure sign of coming weather. Ramon saw flashes of lightning beneath the cloud bank's belly, but it was too far to hear the thunder. It would rain, but not here. Wherever the other Ramon was now, at least he wouldn't need to worry about getting soaked. How strange it must be for the other Ramon. Hurt. Alone. Unaware that there was someone else now who knew about the aliens and was plotting to keep him alive and free. Ramon imagined his twin out there, hiding under the leaves, possibly even watching the bone-white box make its wide, arcing path through the air. Frightened. The other Ramon would be frightened and pissed off. Frightened not only because of what he'd found and the hunt in which he was now the prey, but also from being so alone, so isolated. There was a difference between isolation and solitude. With the van and his supplies, he'd enjoyed solitude, thinking he was the only man north of Fiddler's Jump with no way to call for help, sleeping in improvised shelters and fleeing an inscrutable alien civilization. That was different. He tried to imagine himself in that place. He tried to think how he would feel. He'd want to kill the pinche alien, and he knew that was right, because sitting here next to the thing, that was exactly what he wanted. Ramon sighed. At least the other Ramon didn't have this thing stuck in his neck. Manek shuddered, the Unea coming to a sudden halt in midair. Ramon's attention snapped to the alien. Its quills were as agitated as grass in a high wind. Its arms seemed to fidget with each other and with nothing. Ramon felt a deep sense of dread bloom in his belly. Something had happened. "You got something?" he asked.
"The man has been nearby. Recently. You were correct in your interpretation of his flow. You are an apt tool."
"Where is he?" Manek didn't answer. The Unea began to sway slowly back and forth, as if hung from the sky by a rope. Ramon stood up, the slats of the floor biting into the soft, uncalloused soles of his feet. His heart was racing, though he couldn't say what it was he hoped or feared would happen. The Sahel pulsed once and went quiet again. "Where is he?" Ramon repeated, and this time Manek turned to him.
"He is not present," the alien rumbled. "You will interpret this."
The Unea shifted, sloping down through the air. Ramon stumbled and sat back down. The leafy canopy parted, and a long, wide meadow came into view. Great flat stones, granite from the look of them, lay among the grasses and wildflowers, and at the side of one of them, something fluttered. Ramon squinted, fighting to make it out. A branch or a stick had been driven into the soil at the great stone's edge, and a rag had been tied to the top, like a banner. The cloth was dirty and pale, with darker stains. His shirt. It was the rest of Ramon's shirt, tied by its one remaining sleeve.
"What is the significance of this object?" Manek asked.
"Fuck if I know," Ramon said.
"Maybe it's a flag of surrender. Could be that he wants to talk."
"If he wishes to converse, why would he not be present?"
"You shot his finger off." Manek went silent. The Unea made a slow circuit of the strange flag. Ramon sucked at his teeth. It had to have been put there to get their attention. And yet the idea of surrender fit poorly with Ramon's intuition. Ramon Espejo would not want to surrender. The Unea hovered over the stone, lowering itself slowly toward the ground. Ramon imagined his twin out in the forest, maybe watching them. Had he had binoculars in his pack when the aliens found him, or had they been left in the van and got incinerated? No, they wouldn't have been. There wouldn't have been room in his pack for the field glasses and coring charges both. Ramon's unease sprang to full panic. The coring charges! The branch set just at the edge of the stone where it could amplify any vibration within the granite slab. It wasn't a flag. It was a trigger. Stop! He shouted. A half second too late. The Unea touched down. Ramon thought he could see the branch shudder in the immeasurably brief moment before the explosion came.